I grind for the love of the game. PTJ is back, so don't churn the station. We grind for the love of the game, and the game has some players stuck in bad situations. Welcome to Projecting the Jump. This is Flying J. That is, of course, Natron Clean. Natron?
Hey, welcome. Good to be back with you this season. What is it, season 5 for us? Season 4?
This will be episode 45, if you count the last episode, which I think of as the Clint Capella episode, because we had a deep dive on that situation with Okongwu and Capella and on that pod. I don't know if it's year 3 or 4, actually.
Oh, definitely got to be 4.
This is episode 45.
Nice. Anyway. Well, glad to be back. This has been, I got to say, this is the most locked in to early season NBA that I can remember being. I feel like it's been so competitive, so interesting. The storylines have been wild in that, like, the teams you expect are not always been the best teams and vice versa. What's your level of engagement been?
Well, to be honest, and some of you who know me, follow this podcast, know, you know, I'm a multi-sport draftlete. So I'm still in the phase of like, okay, good. My teams are doing really well. I know the lay of the land. I'm looking into things, but it is the beginning of the fantasy playoffs. I play a lot of best ball. I advanced 59 teams in best ball, and I have 10% Kyle Pitts on those teams who scored 40 points yesterday. This tight end who's played 5 years in the NFL scored 7% of his career points yesterday. And
Kyle
game.
Pitts sounds like somebody I went to middle school with. Is he a middle school alum of Walker Middle School?
He may be. He's a big athletic tight end for Atlanta. But so I'm thinking about stuff like how many Kyle Pitts teams did I advance, you know, so then I'll make the full-time jump. So I've been watching a lot of the play-in games, burning through a lot of condensed games. Just watch the Wizards-Cavs game, and you can do these like little five-minute games. So I'm doing that for most games most nights. I'm keeping up that way.
Nice. Yeah, this has been, I've had a blast. And I got to say, I'm so into these NBA Cup games. The like level of competition has been amazing. Outside of the bracket so far has not been the most exciting, but the lead up to it has been really awesome.
Yeah, it would be more exciting if we didn't know the outcome of what's coming, how this was all going to end. So we'll get to that.
There was some easy money on the Thunder going into that.
That one killed me because I think it was like minus 170 or something. And I was like, that's just such a hammer. That's just like, lay your kids' future college tuition money down on that. That was just the easiest layup of all time.
Yeah, especially when they sat their starters right beforehand. You're like, they're going to try, aren't they? If they're like giving up the game ahead of time, like this is important to them for some reason.
You check the box score at the end. You're like, oh, Shea only had to play 25 minutes for them to win by 48. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's no good. No kidding.
I did want to ask you before we get started on today's topic, because I know we've texted a little bit about this, but there's always this kind of letdown period when we readjust to, you know, okay, it's just game 24 of a team's calendar instead of this play-in tournament. And you have to drop back down to those random Wednesdays and, you know, it's just not quite as exciting. So there's always an adjustment period to getting back to the grind of the 82-game season.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of wild to see. You can see the players kind of ramp up back and forth, too. I mean, I'm always a little bit surprised by that, just because I assume that, you know, you have these professional athletes that are, it's their job to be ready. They spend their entire time mentally prepping to kind of be in that headspace, to be locked in, to be their best. And then you get these games where a lot of these guys are able to just kind of ramp up their focus a little bit and their kind of and how hard they're playing. I am always surprised by that level that certain guys have to put a little bit more focus in on and kind of pull that off. I mean, I experienced that myself yesterday. I went to bowling league. I was a fill-in and bowled a 208. And then I had 3 beers and my attention span waned a little bit and I dropped back down to closer to my average. But at that time, I was thinking about playoff Jamal or, you know, playoff Shea.
My mind started drifting and I was like, I was going... I just filtered through just getting an idea who the top ranked players are now who are. And Jamal Murray was like number 7. He's in the top 10.
Is he really?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing how much he's come to play so far this season.
It's nuts. You know, your point is well taken about, wow, these guys can just kind of ramp it up and turn it on anytime. I think like anything, when there's a lot of repetition and you do the same thing over and over, your human instinct is to coast when you can and save energy, like just conserve that battery when you can. And so to know that like they can kind of tap into that whenever it's necessary reminds you how incredible these athletes are for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, today, Neutron Clean, speaking of incredible, we're going to look at some players who are in situations that are suboptimal for their output in fantasy. So these are players we want to see a higher usage role for. Maybe it's in a different team environment. Maybe we just want to see them get out from under the old creaky starter. Now, I kind of think of Okongwu behind Capella for all those years as a good example of this, who actually, despite his breakout this season, still takes another usage jump when Porzingis is out. So there's tiers to this. Of course, a player can always step up in usage or in role based on who's out. But I kind of thought of this as like a good exercise in preparing for streamers we're going to pick up, being ready if there's an injury or a trade that goes down. Or if you play DFS, just a reminder of the correlation between teammates, knowing, okay, if this guy's out, this is who benefits the most. And so that's kind of how I attack this topic, which we're kind of calling best players in worst situations. It's like the working title. So, Natron, how'd you attack this? I know it was kind of a challenging one finding these players.
Yeah, I'll admit this was a challenging topic for me to kind of wrap my head around a little bit. And I think a lot of that was that this season in particular has been the most challenging season since the COVID season as far as like finding guys. And I think a lot of that is just there's been such a rash of injuries out there. I mean, it's amazing how much early season injuries have kind of happened. Thankfully, they haven't been the like devastating, you know, kind of like knee injuries. There's just been a whole bunch of these calf injuries in particular, or hammies, but calfs a lot of. And so you have so many short-term injuries, 2 week, 4 weeks out. And it's the other thing that's been kind of interesting too is that the distribution of injuries has felt like, I feel like some seasons you just see some teams just get hammered by it. And you're like, okay, well, what are you going to do? You're missing four starters. And this year it feels like every single team has been affected by
it's
this.
It's distributed more equally a little, you're right, throughout the rosters.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was looking through it and I was trying to think, I was like, all right, what team is the least injury affected this season? I'm going to throw that question at you right now because I was running through and I was like, is it the Celtics who are missing their best player? Are the Celtics the least injury affected team in the entire league? Maybe the Timberwolves, I guess.
No, it's true. I'm like bouncing through names. I'm like, cross them off the list.
The Thunder. So the Thunder are off to the best start in NBA history. They haven't. Their starting lineup from the playoffs hasn't played together once this season, or hasn't started together once the entire season.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. I didn't catch that. We'll just have to move on. Yeah, no, it's unreal. No, you're right. It really has. As you go through every team's, you know, let's take Atlanta for instance. Some teams have even benefited as far as consolidating the rotations, finding a new style of play. You get Trae Young out of there, who's, you know, obviously a horrible defender, and you have to protect him on that end. And then you get all these switchy guys who could shoot, running and gunning up and down the floor. We discover that the best Alexander is actually, Alexander Walker, probably in the league. So,
well, the best in the Eastern Conference, at least.
It's the Western Eastern Conference. But, you know, it was a challenge. And I think these sort of exercises, you can kind of do them at home, too. Just kind of going through and saying, you know, getting an idea of, okay, who would benefit if a player does go out? Because there are all these injuries, and we do want to be ready for that. And we've seen some interesting guys. So, Nathan, I will actually defer to you. I'm going to pass you the rock.
I was just going to finish that a little, like, process there. And so it was kind of like, I mean, I think basically, I mean, you have all these injuries. So, like, what's been interesting or really hard to make this really hard to evaluate, I thought, was that you have so many starters out. So you have these bench guys that we always want to see in these big roles that have now had that opportunity to be in that role. And then you have all these the guys playing 15 minutes a night that all of a sudden are actually playing 25 minutes a night. So I feel like where we would typically sit this time of the season, we're kind of jonesing to see these first, second year guys kind of get their opportunity. And we have to wait till silly season. We're seeing that now, even if it's only for like 5 games, 10 games. And some of them are hits, you know. I mean, you're getting these Colin Gillespies, you're getting these Ryan Rollins, or you just said Nikhil Ander Walker. So we're seeing those, but then you also see a bunch of guys that you're like, okay, well, now I'm less excited to see this for silly season a little bit.
True. And there's a player on my list we'll get to who you would look forward to in silly season, and usually this team would be involved, and they're not going to be involved this year. So you get a little tease of a player who steps up in the rotation,
like,
and then the guy comes back who he replaced, and then he goes right back into the shadows.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, I'm excited to get to that. Sorry, I got kind of a long intro, but my guys are pretty short, so it should all even out. The other thing I was kind of was thinking a lot about this, and this was just me spitballing. So I want to hear if you think this has legs or not. What I was wondering is if we're seeing a little bit of the effect of the second apron kind of happening here, in that it's kind of evening off teams, or kind of like the good players are being distributed, or at least the medium level players are being distributed between teams a little bit more. And so you're not getting these like teams with super, you know, like this kind of super teams with super subs and then a bunch of scrubs on other teams that we're seeing really equal distribution out there. And so I was wondering if that kind of factors into this a little bit.
That's kind of a next level take on something I was thinking about, which is you go through the playoff teams and there are just less glaring holes positionally on these teams that you were like, okay, I'd love to get this young player from this logjam onto this contender. And then I go to the contender and I'd be like, oh, they don't need him. Or why would they take the risks with this guy when, you know, they could just keep playing this guy? So there was less of those obvious spots, which added to the challenge of this exercise, but it's a good point. There's a bit of a socialism going through the rosters as far as distributing those mid-tier players. And they're just more good players. There's, you know, the 6 through 10 guys are just better than they were in the mid-aughts. Or, you know, or, you know, even 10 years.
Speaking of which, so I know you have a vested interest in this, and I promise I'm going to get to my guys here in a second, but this just made me think of it. So, I mean, because you're sitting next to a bunch of CL Supersonic stuff behind you, on top of you. I'm guessing in front of you. I don't know, but.
Just behind but me.
We're seeing so many more players play this season. Do you think that the overall talent distribution is deep enough right now that if we had two more teams that for fantasy purposes, we'd be like, yes, like there's this many guys we really want. Or are we going to see a whole bunch of like Caleb Loves starting for the Vegas and stuff?
Gotta love this question. So I'm going to put on my objectivity hat, despite the actual hat I'm wearing here. Which I'm able to do. It's a part of my amateur job. And to say that, no, I think one of the arguments, absolutely, that this is the right time for expansion is that the player pools is incredibly deep, perhaps as deep as it's ever been. 95, when the Vancouver Grizzlies and Toronto Raptors came in and you saw those expansion drafts, I think the prize of that draft was like 31-year-old Greg Anthony. I don't know his exact age, but he was a journeyman already at that point. The talent pool was just much thinner, and so those teams were rough. They were roughnecks. But I do think that an expansion draft now, it would not only would it could the NBA absorb it as far as the talent the other teams have now, but for fantasy it would help because it would get some of the guys we're going to talk about here into bigger roles. And so that's a really good point. And Silver, if you're listening, Adam Silver, please stop being such a wussy. It's time to expand.
Mm-hmm. And come on the pod.
Yeah, and come on the pod so we can confront you, even though you're kind of creepy looking. But that's fine. We don't judge.
I like him. I mean, he's a little creepy, but that's fine.
He's wearing on me a little bit. I think sometimes he's just very robotic, but he's doing a good job overall.
Yeah, I think he's doing a great job. Okay, so getting to guys here.
Let's get into guys.
Yeah, so I really have three main guys, kind of four guys-ish. And so the first guy I'm going to start off with is Noah Clowney.
Okay. Love it.
Yeah, I've watched a handful of Nets games. They kind of seem to be playing a lot of times when I'm able to watch games. And so they're kind of a rough watch right now. And they do this thing where they play 9 to 10 guys, 20 minutes, which is a little rough to, you know, kind of really follow the thread or kind of get into what you watch a player and then he's in and out, in and out. And so it's kind of hard to pay attention to any particular player too much.
I was surprised the one guy to throw in their name, the Nets have 6 wins this year. That's incredible. That's a good coaching job.
Yeah. They occasionally are okay.
Tonight, we're recording, by the way, on December 12th, the evening. They gave the Mavericks a run for their money tonight. They ran out of gas at the end, but they're highly competitive when they want to be.
They are.
When they're allowed to be.
Yeah, now there's the second point of that. But yeah, it seems like watching them, they have 3 guys that are actual real NBA players right now. Obviously, MPJ and then
Danny Wolf.
Clarkson. Danny Wolf. Yeah. But Noah Clowney has kind of stood out as being, you know, you watch him and you're like, this guy looks good. He looks athletic and he looks really raw. You know, like he looks like he's just still figuring it out, but he looks like a real keeper. I mean, he's a third-year player, first-round pick out of Alabama. But this season, what's really been really interesting for fantasy is he's kind of providing a little bit of – he's giving you that really rare combination of stats and positional eligibility where he's a forward center, power forward center, but he plays – but his stats are a lot more like a shooting guard. So he's giving you 17 points and 3 threes along with 1.8 stocks. So it's pretty bad, kind of Miles Turner-y.
What's that? Is he averaging 17 points on the season flat out?
Sorry, that's over the last month.
That's still a big chunk. Dang.
Yeah, he's having this little boost over the last 4 weeks. So he's the 61st player over the last month, which is really kind of taken a step forward. And, you know, it's outside of MPJ, who's, you know, clearly their best player and is looking great. And I just want to go on back on record again as feel like I was the one of the only people that was pushing back a little bit on this MPJ Cam Johnson trade, where I feel like the greater NBA analysts were hailing this as a great trade for Denver. I was pushing back on it a little bit. And I'm going to stand by that, even though MAGA Porter is looking wackier and wackier off the court. I mean, I don't know if you heard this most recent thing about him saying that he shouldn't need to tip when he...
Yes, I did.
I paid $3,000 for this dinner. I shouldn't need to tip. Or what do you say? I shouldn't need to tip $300 on top of it. And it's like, all right, first off, you cheapskate. Like 10% is pretty weak. But a zero is even worse.
Yeah, he might be the most accomplished podcaster on the Nets, though. You got to give him that.
That's a strong point. But so, anyway, just to finish him up real quick, he's averaging 28 minutes per night. His usage is only 19%. So what I'm wondering is,
it's more than
as the season goes on, that's a really good point. That's a strong point. As the season goes on and they kind of focus, perhaps maybe they focus more on him. Maybe they give him more freedom to play a little bit. And that 19% usage goes up. What if his 9.5 shots goes up to 13? Mike Porter Jr. is averaging 19, just for reference on that.
Yeah, I love that. Great one. I love his inclusion because he's already shown us he can do it. He has the pedigree. He passes the eye test and his role could increase. You know, MAGA Porter could be traded. He could start having aches and pains as we get, you know, deeper in past the winter into the spring. I think you'll see a lot of red on MPJ's game log one way or the other. Mm-hmm. They'll figure out a way, you know, just to get a look at Clowney. But no, he's a good one. I think he could really blossom into one of these kind of switchy plug and play multi-position players in real life for a good team. And so we could be looking at him in the future as one of these players that we draft, you know, in the 8 to 12 range. And rather than, you know, being a guy we don't know what we're getting could turn into one of these role players where we do know what we're getting. I think he has that kind of game.
Yeah, good call.
No, it's a good one. All right, I'm going to try to come in with a little bit of heat here on this one. No pun intended. So in 6 games without Bam Adebayo this season, his minutes only tick up 2. We're talking about Khalil Ware.
I figured this is where you're going to start.
Yeah, I had to. So, you know, his minutes go up by 2 only. Yeah, he averages 12.7 points, 12.5 rebounds, and 2.3 rebounds and a steal. Excuse me, I said rebounds twice. 2.3 blocks and a steal. So he's averaging a double-double, basically 13 and 13 with 3.5 stocks, basically. His minutes, like, here are just wildly inconsistent when the Heat are healthy. His game log, his last two games, he played 30 and 12. He played 12 against Orlando.
That was in the play.
Yeah.
Game too.
Right. And they, you know, they bring him in towards the end of quarters to get guys rests. And he's a confusing player. Actually, I do want to ask you, and I think there's going to be a theme throughout some of my players here where I just want to really explore how good are they? Khalil Ware, he can really run up and down the court. He can catch lobs. I know coming out of the draft, you weren't super high on him based on his kind of motor. And I've kind of been more of a Khalil Ware guy. Has he changed your mind at all? Do you think this is a guy that a team would be happy to plan to give 30 minutes to? Or do you think he's going to be a flash in the pan guy? Where are you at with Khalil Ware?
I mean, I guess I got to start with I was wrong on him. I mean, I thought he was going to be a bust and be almost out of the league at this point. So he's already way exceeded my expectations.
Right. Yeah.
Miami was a gift to him. I mean, that was to land in a spot where he had to play hard, has a coach that has the equity to call him out on those things has been great for him. What is his ceiling overall? Well, here's a question. Oh, man. What's the name of that Miami center from like 8 years ago?
Ronnie Cycli.
He played in Utah, played in Portland. Hassan Whiteside. Do you think his career is going to be better or worse than Hassan Whiteside when it's all said and done? Because they both were elite athletes.
Yeah, Ware can shoot the three, obviously. Whiteside was never able to transition towards the end of his career into the modern game of being able to stretch the floor at all. The only thing Whiteside stretched was his coach's patience. This is PG podcast. But that's a good one. I like that. Ware has a more versatile offensive game, but he doesn't have a trait as dominant as what a great rebounder and shot blocker Whiteside could be when he was trying. So I would still give Whiteside's over. If we're looking at Basketball Reference and we're comparing players, I don't think Khalil Ware will have the stat profile that Whiteside was able to put up when his career is over.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, he seems like one of those guys that's, if they hits the open market, everybody's going to be afraid to give him the deal and too afraid to not give him the deal.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I hope, you know, from their vantage point, you know, I think he could become an asset if they don't, you know, hopefully they play it right, because I think he could be an asset. You get these younger players where the team shows their hand, like Jonathan Kuminga. It's like once the Warriors realized he wasn't that guy, that he just played well in spurts, they exposed that to the rest of the league. They were like, they exposed their secret. I think that they could have done a better job while he still had value.
Yeah.
And I think the Heat are smarter than that. Only they really know if they think Khalil Ware can be a winning player in a 30-minute role.
Yeah.
But for fantasy,
it's true.
I'd love to see him catching lobs from LaMelo Ball or something, you know?
Right. It doesn't matter for what we're trying to do.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
What you want him to do. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Talk about a perfect situation for him. That'd be amazing. Yeah, that's true. I don't think he's a winning player, but I think he's a winning fantasy player.
Love that. So what we want with Khalil Ware is to see him end up in a bigger role, which in Miami would take a Bam injury. So I guess the actionable thing as we tie up Khalil Ware is, of course, if Bam stubs his toe, you immediately pick up Khalil Ware. In a lot of leagues, you know, 160 or higher, your average 12-team league, he's probably still rostered. You're probably just going to hold on to him and deal with the, you know, 4 points and 5 rebound nights.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably riding that thing out for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You want to hit me with another player? You want to move through to my second based on how many you got?
No, I'll move on to my next and then we'll kind of run out. I'll let you just kind of keep going. So the next one, the rest of my guys are... I'm going to just warn the listeners out there, pretty niche. And so they're quite a bit less. Right. Yeah, exactly. So the next guy kind of is quite typical of this or representative of it. And this is a player I really like, but and that's Ron Holland.
Oh, this is fun. Right on. Good for you.
I like Rollin Holland, and I'm just going to start off by saying he is not rosterable right now. Like, if you're going to pick him up this week, look somebody else. Like, he's not going to help you right now.
Isaiah Stewart is ranked stream right now.
For sure, yeah. Is it? Yeah, Beef Stew is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
But
yeah,
there we go. So he's ranked 200 per game. So that's really, you're talking about a 16 team. He's a streamer at that point. But he was the fifth overall pick last year. So week draft, but fifth overall pick. Last year, he played 15 minutes per night. This year, he's playing 21 minutes a night. He's not giving you much as far as raw box scores. 8-3-3. But what's exciting about him and what is appealing for what could be coming if the opportunity is there is 1.7 steals per game.
Yeah.
In 20 minutes. That's elite. It's a real outlier elite. Now, is he the worst shooter in the entire league? Maybe. He might be.
He's certainly in the discussion.
I watched the game with him, was it this week, last week? I forget what it was. Recently, and I watched him bank in a straight-on three. Just overshoot the basket by 2 feet, and it went in, though. It was something you'd see the fans that, like, got called up from section 237 to go shoot a three, and that's how it happened. But so he's, what's appealing about him is that he plays with so much energy, so much passion. Yes. He plays every possession as hard as he can.
And for fantasy, if you see him on the opposing team's lineup that day, there's an intimidation factor. So you got to consider that when thinking about his value.
That's true. He might just come out and start fighting the members of your Yahoo squad.
Do you think that there's any closer facsimile to Ron Artest in the league at this point, as far as like what his potential, what we hope he would become, and the vibes?
Wow. What a great comp. That was impressive. I mean, the first, second, and third option that you're looking for right now is on the Pistons team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is a great comp. He's got the size of it, and he's got the defensive tenacity. I mean, Meta World Peace eventually got a 3-point stroke to it, to his game. And so that's
the development of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, so for me, what I'm looking for with Ron Holland is he's, I think, of the players that are not rostered, he's one of the guys that I monitor the most closely game in, game out. Because I think there's two real pathways for him to be a rest of the season player. And they both are feasible. The first is that he starts actually hitting three-pointers, which a good reminder is that their shooting coach is Fred Vincent, who was the shooting coach in New Orleans for years and is a top two shooting coach in the entire NBA. And then you look at what they did last year.
You are good on the shooting coach knowledge. I would say you're one of the, I mean, you deserve your flowers on it, but yeah, you're one of the top shooting coach knowledge guys out there.
Well, it's one of these under-the-radar things that really makes a difference. I mean, because you look at the Pistons last year, they made so many threes. It was insane. You had all these guys that had career-best shooting seasons from mid-level guys. And what did they do? Did they retain those guys? No, they got rid of them all, and then they brought in new guys because they were so confident in their development of their in-season ability or their coaching ability there. Right. So I think it's not beyond the realm of possibilities that he starts coming up to league average. And if he's league average, then he's something. The second thing is, even with Tobias Harris out for a number of games, Ron Holland hasn't really popped. I think some of that is because they're playing Jalen Duren and Asar Thompson, so they really need the shooting.
Yes.
What I was wondering, and I'm going to float this one right past you here, is I'm almost thinking that the biggest injury opportunity that could unleash him would be an injury to Jalen Duren.
Hey,
and he could then, in effect,
fight your song.
I know. I know you're a big Jalen Duren fan, and I know he trained with Sheed, so I like that.
This is what we're doing. Yeah, that's a good food for thought that, like, you wouldn't think that the starting center getting hurt would benefit a guy like Ron Holland, but it just might be his best path to minutes based on what he's good at now, is what you're saying.
Right, because then the center that would fill in would be Beef Stew. Right. And Stewart's a stretch five at this point now, legitimately. Yeah. So you have more spacing on the court. So maybe you have more ability to play Ron Holland, and that opens up some pathway to him.
I was listening to what you're saying, and then the periods that I wasn't, I was picturing you looking at your screensaver of all the NBA shooting coaches. Is that your computer screensaver by chance? That'd be sick. Or maybe even your phone screensaver.
No. I mean, I have the flashcards.
Okay, good.
Yeah. It's more old school than that. I have it on 3.5 flashcards.
And I don't say it to attack. I for 6 months this year, I mean, from like March through the end of August, my phone screensaver was the NFL schedule weeks 15 through 17, because those are the best ball players.
Wow.
Memorize all the matchups when I'm drafting. I don't always have to look. So, you know, I made flashcards 1 year to memorize all of those matchups because that's where all the money is.
Yeah, right.
So I'm not hating. Oh, that's funny. But that was a good one. That was a good one, Ron Holland. And it's very topical. Let's stay in Detroit here. Because if we're going to be talking about guys who could jump into a bigger situation, you got to touch on my boy Dan S. Jenkins. And that's Dan S.
I'm excited to hear you talk about him.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about him. So he's an undrafted point guard. I think the last college he bounced around quite a bit. And he was a graduate student for his last year in college. It's slipping my name where he went, but it was a prestigious school, but he wasn't drafted. He's got some size. He's 6'4". I didn't really know much about him, but he's one of these players where there are multiple paths to him paying off. Let's start with the time he's spent on the court without Ausar Thompson. It's only been 4 games, but without Thompson on the floor, I'm calling him Dan S for fun, you know, like an insurance salesman. This is Dan S. Jenkins. His name's 21.8 points, Licky. 7.8 dimes, 4.3 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2.5 triples. And like, this isn't for, you know, the 4-17 Pistons. This is for the juggernaut Pistons. And he kept that ship afloat throughout many injuries. You know, I was going through, you know, and I've given this a shout out before, and I'll do it again. Hashtag basketball. Keeping this free is incredible. Some of the free services you still offer. Shout out hashtag basketball. I wasn't paid for this. But the next man up feature, you can just go to a player, like, you know, I'll take Ausar Thompson, and I can go through and see everyone's stats in the 4 games. It shows me their stats without that player in the lineup and their stats with them in the lineup, so I can compare. But when you do Jenkins, you can go through all, no Cade, no Tobias. He takes giant jumps every single time. And again, he's one of these players where would a team really want to give him a big role as a starter? I think it's too soon to really know, but he really turned a lot of heads. Now, we're not going to have his silly season in Detroit this year, as I mentioned. So the only way to see him back in this role would be for somebody to go out of the lineup, but pretty much any usage player, and you got to grab this guy right away. And I always think about him as like a handcuff. If you have any of these Pistons and you have room on your team, you know, maybe you want to try to keep this guy in a sizable league. But yeah, that was one of the bigger surprises of the league as far as this season, as far as a player seizing an opportunity that I just didn't see coming.
Yeah, 100%. I love his inclusion here. Yeah, so he was at, among other colleges, Iona, then with Rick Pitino, then followed him to St. John. So he finished the St. John's,
right,
with
thanks.
Rick Pitino. It's interesting, like, you see some of these stats and then you watch the game sometimes. And I feel like sometimes when you watch a player play a game, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, you're good at filling this niche and you put up these stats. And then there's other players where you go, no, you just belong on the court. I mean, Ryan Rollins was another example of that for me this season, where I was like, oh, you're actually just one of the best players on the court.
A baller.
And Jenkins, like, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And Jenkins, another one where I turned into some Pistons game and it was just happened to be a game where they had all their starters out. And I was like, oh, come on. Like I don't know. For some reason, I had a free evening. It was the only game on. I was like, well, I guess I'm watching this game, which has literally no starters in it. And I was like, I don't know who the hell this Jenkins guy is, like, but he's blowing them up. Like, and so the other one I wonder about pathway is, I mean, you talk about, I love how you brought up he's got multiple pathways for injury.
Yeah.
The other sneaky one is the team that's most rumored in one of these big consolidation trades is the Pistons. And I could see them being like, we'll give you these other guys, but we kind of want to hang on to this cheap guy, Jenkins. And then,
yeah,
because then he'll have a pathway there as well.
Yeah, an undrafted free agent that pops like that early in their career, just not going to get traded. That's just not a thing. That would be an interesting deep dive to just go through and look at productive undrafted rookies. I mean, it's a pretty niche little project, but I don't think those guys would ever get flipped because it's kind of like the best thing in the when the Seahawks had that, you know, almost dynasty, and in the mid-2000s, it was because they already had the infrastructure, they had the players, but they had to hit on a third-round quarterback and be able to pay him third-round money for that chunk of time. Mm-hmm. And so in football, the greatest thing that can happen is hitting on a late-round quarterback. And then if you get one of these guys and you're paying them that minimum salary, you're not going to trade that player. So we're not going to see him on another team, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he's a great one. I'm excited to see. Because you see some of these guys, especially there when they come in as older rookies, sometimes you see guys that are what they are, and then other times you see guys that are like Dame, who came in as an older rookie,
yeah,
and then was just like, and then just kept getting better and better and better. And so he's going to be a guy that's going to be really curious to watch. So what's your action on him right now? If you are in a 12-team league, are you monitoring him? Are you actively streaming him? Are you trying to hold him?
It's the first or the third. Yeah, I mean, if you can hold him, it's kind of a luxury stash at this point. I would have to be doing really well in the standings. To be honest with you, I'm not sure what his role looks like with the team fully healthy. I'm not sure if they're sure how they're going to handle that. So it's hard to prognosticate where that will head, because I think it's just,
and it's curious to see where he's going to be with Jaden Ivey too.
Yes. But I think if anything, it's foreboding for Ivy. I just don't know if when they're having this kind of success in a wide open Eastern Conference, why would you work out the kinks with Ivy when you have this ready made kind of veteran rookie who's just come in and just, you know, seems to be a really smart player. So, yeah, that's an interesting little log jam there. So, Ivy heads, this might not be the year that he breaks through. But I think Jenkins might have surplanted Ivy, frankly.
Ooh, all right. I like that exclamation
point
there.
That's my spicy mark. I'd rather hold Jenkins than Ivy. If you want to stash one of these young Pistons guys, I prefer Jenkins this season. ROS for sure.
All right. I like that little mini hot take.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stick with equally as niche rookie players as well. And so going to go to, say, in the Eastern Conference and go up to Toronto and go with Colin Murray-Boyles.
Oh, that is
who
easy.
Has,
please stay tuned. Yeah, no. Hear him out. Let's stay here. Just to keep it dialed.
Right. Yeah. Just at least like keep a screen in screen on this one.
We're gonna find out who really enjoys our content by who listened to this. I'm gonna predict 17 human beings consume this part.
16 of, and most of them are either in South Carolina or in Toronto.
Yeah. We'll have to email it. Get onto the email lists out there.
Oh, right.
Anyhow,
I'm going to keep this one short for this reason. This will be a quick one. But so Murray-Boyles was the 9th overall pick this year in a stacked draft. I mean, this year is looking really exceptional as far as draft years goes. And so he was drafted in the top 10. And he looks pretty good. He's come into a deep situation in Toronto where there isn't as much playing time. So if he was in a team like, say, Charlotte, he'd be on the floor a lot more and have a really big opportunity. He doesn't really have that because he's playing behind some veteran centers and a bunch of veteran power forwards too. So he's only getting out there for 17 minutes a game. But the reason I wanted to include him in this is, you know, I love Jakob Poeltl. I'm a Jakob Poeltl guy.
Don't we all?
I will say that he looks the slenderest of the year, which, just a little side conspiracy theory, I was wondering if he got on the Ozempic diet a little bit. I'm wondering if he's one of the Ozempic guys like Luca.
Jakob Poeltl?
Just wondering. Just throwing that one out there. Very slender this year.
Yeah, he looks a little malnourished at times. Like, he looks like he just had a bowl of oatmeal before he got into the court.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, Jakob Erl is great, but he's, you know, he's getting up there a little bit in age. And what was interesting,
his system quite as well either, with like adding Ingram and the way that they're playing really well together as this kind of long, switchy, quick team. Poeltl struggled a little bit to find his way there this year.
Yes, it's been an awkward fit for him a little bit. And I mean, what made me think about including him was watching that cup game where they played against New York. And Poeltl, who granted I love, he got played off the court a little bit. It was just, it was one of those things where it was probably matchup based, you know, playing up against a stretch center isn't his strength. But when Murray Boyles got in there, he didn't have a good game, but he looked good though. I mean, he's very athletic. He's a facilitator. You know, you can see he's bouncy. He's looking for the pass a lot. He's raw, but I thought there's something there to him. Yeah. And the Raptors clearly think that because they have some veterans ahead of him, including your boy, Sandro. I'm going to let you say his last name.
Memo Kelishvili.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, this is a nice deep cut.
Yeah, but I think I'm just, it was something to monitor there a little bit. I think if something happens to the center rotation, if something happens to the power forward rotation, I think that as the season goes on, he could be the guy who has pop potential. That's the only reason I want to include him, because I thought he might have some pop.
Yeah. No, that's a nice name to throw out there. They're relatively thin, especially up front. It's not like they have a lot of depth. And the wiki Chris Boucher isn't waiting to just like randomly, you know, get 22 minutes and then not play for a month. Now there's, it wouldn't take much for him to step into a bigger role. That's for sure. And it's a name to keep in mind if you play Dynasty or any format with keepers. Even if he's not popping now, and if he gets any opportunity later, then he could be a streamer. So he has many paths to being a name to file away, but that, I wonder if we'll venture to go deeper on this podcast. Could we?
I don't know. I'll let you lead the way. That's as deep as I go personally.
Okay. All right. We're going to do a little, little twist.
Maybe not true.
A little twist here. So this is a request I have. This is a hope. Can we please get CJ McCollum out of Washington?
Jeez Louise. Good call.
Your boy. He went off again. I think he had 34 points tonight against the Cavs. He looked great. It's his age 34 season. I want to shout him out. Licky is one of the best guards ever to not make an all-star team. Shout out Derek Harper. Shout out Rod Strickland. But he's on the short list of when his career ends. It's a damn shame CJ McCollum was never an all-star. Do you have any feelings about that before we get into the fantasy?
No. Is Jamal Murray, has he made a playoff team? Yes, or all-star team.
I'd say he's been a three-time all-star. Yeah, three-time, 2 to 3.
Oh, okay, yeah. He's. I don't think he's ever been unduly snubbed, but I think he's always been on that short list, and it's just a bummer that it hasn't broken his way. And a lot of it's because his best seasons have always been in the West.
Yeah, it was loaded out there. Yeah, good measure to take. It's just a bummer that when his career ends, he's a zero-time all-star. But whatever, ones know. But he still looks like 80% of prime CJ most nights. It surprised me. He hasn't missed a game this year, which is pretty impressive. Yeah. You know, 18 points.
He takes a couple off, you know, effort wise,
he plays for the Wizards.
Plays them all. That's
him taking off effort wise fits their scheme. So he's just being a team player. They don't need to be good all the time. So he can stay on the court if he takes possessions off. But yeah, his minutes are solid. Is his production serviceable? But we just don't need him there. And there's many guys who could benefit from getting CJ McCollum out of Washington. The one I'm most interested in is my boy Killa Cam Whitmore. Again, I just want to know if this guy is good. Like, he looked really good in summer league in Houston as a rookie. He fell in the draft due to concerns about his attitude and stuff like that. But he looks the part. He's incredibly athletic. You could make him an MVP in NBA 2K with no effort. I mean, he has that kind of video game athletic game. And I thought, you know, seeing him in Washington pop over there this year, that he might be able to find some minutes. He didn't play the first half of the game I don't know if he made it in the second half against Cleveland tonight, but he can't get in for the worst team in the league. And, you know, I just want to see CJ playing meaningful minutes somewhere. So this is both wanting better for CJ and also just wanting Washington to prioritize playing their youngest players and seeing what you have. There's no reason to give, I guess I'll ask this in the form of a question. Do you think there's value to giving real minutes to players like CJ McCollum and Chris Middleton, who, you know, they're not even in their late primes. They're just still service good players, you know, but they're mm-hmm. totally falling out of their primes at this point. Do you think it behooves a team like Washington who wants to build a healthy culture to have these guys in roles and then maybe pull them out at the end? Is that kind of the model? Or should we just, you know, take the gloves off and let these young guys figure it out? And maybe you want your best role players, your best veterans being true role players, like towel waivers.
Boy, isn't that a great question? I feel like that's the ultimate question on these for these rebuilding teams.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's frustrating for the fan, for if you're a fan, every single time late in season that one of those veterans kind of goes off. You know, I can think of, you know, some of the Blazer teams. There was somebody went for 50 points when we were that bumped us from the sixth pick to the seventh pick. That was unnecessary. But I think more and more, I like what Washington's trying to do because they're not just bringing in veterans that are you know, like that Jordan Clarkson's, or not to throw shade on him or whatever, but like they're bringing in real professional guys that are good locker room guys that have seen winning, that know what cultures it is, and they're setting the bar for everybody else. It's like, I imagine that they're saying like to all the young guys, we'd rather play you, outplay this 34-year-old. That's all you got to do. We want you to win. We're going to give you every opportunity to beat this guy. That's all you got to do. Like, and just kind of like through competition, raise that game. I like that. At the same time, mm-hmm. if I was Washington, I would be exploring every single avenue for roster building and like an asset building, because they have to at this point. I think this is great. I think that both that CJ has a lot to give to a contender. I mean, think about him real quickly on any of the Texas teams. I guess mainly Houston or Dallas.
Sure,
he'd be great there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Jamal Murray, zero All-Stars.
Are you serious? No, I guess the injury, he has been an injury fill-in. I've seen him play in the dang All-Star game. Do they ultimately count those when you fill in? Do they ultimately count an All-Star appearance when you're a fill-in? I think they do.
I think they do. I don't think he's ever been in an All-Star game.
Okay, we're taking a quick pause from the comments.
Yeah, StatMuse is telling me zero.
Dang. That's wild. Okay, well, that's a good one.
I tend to trust StatMuse, but yeah,
blowing. Okay, yeah, no, you're probably right. I will. We'll put it in the show notes if I end up being right. But for now, we'll settle the score with it. No, I think it's just a really interesting thing to think about, because what we want is players in the most advantageous positions for fantasy. But I do agree with you. I kind of like what Washington's doing, because you can learn more about the character of your younger players, about their drive to succeed and to earn the spot, right? Instead of just handing it, like a player like Whitmore, for instance. You're right. You don't want to hand him 28, 32 minutes on a red carpet. Like, here you go. You know, you want to build some better habits. So that's a really strong point. What I would like them
Whitmore
to do ultimately is go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Whitmore makes Gary Trent Jr. look like like Steve Nash out there.
Yeah, such a vacuum.
Yeah, boy, he's probably passed, but it's been with like 1 second left on the shot clock.
He's not interested. No, So hopefully they will move, especially CJ. I mean, I don't know what you can get for Chris Middleton. He's playing well too. I mean, he's a streamer plus when he's in the lineup, he's really useful. But hopefully they could get some value for those guys and unleash once they built some of these habits. Okay, thanks for the habit building. Let's get these guys out there. Because Whitmore might be a nothing burger. Like, he might be a nothing burger. He just might be a guy who could be the, you know, summer league or G League MVP. And maybe he really is never meeting a meaningful player in a rotation. But I thought this would be the year we find out, and hopefully we still will.
Yeah, hopefully we see. And hopefully we see if Bud Carrington is anything. Hopefully we see if AJ Johnson is anything, or if he's also just another Washington bust.
They have a lot of question marks. Yeah, Carrington can put up some nice lines. He had one with CJ in the backcourt today. Those guys both played well today, CJ and Bub. But you're right. I don't have a great read on if he's a keeper or if he's just putting up good stats. I really don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, who you got?
I got, well, one I was just going to just touch on real quick, which you made me think of, and I had written down as a note, was just Dallas. Just Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
Any player that's on there, if they just need a... Their lack of point guard on the Mavericks is just so glaring. It's insane. It's a tragedy that they went into the season with no point guard. It made no sense in the offseason. It makes less sense now.
I was listening to Simmons and... who's the guy that's really good on there that's, you know, he's not Zach Lowe, but that younger guy.
Yeah, he's from the other Ringer show with, yeah, what's his name, Rob Mahoney?
Yeah, Rob Mahoney. Shout out Rob Mahoney. I'm not going to edit part. It's fine. Sometimes we forget something. But no, they were talking about, Mahoney was like, maybe this was a part of the roster building and not have a point guard. But Jason Kidd's like, no, I'm the point guard. I'll tell you what, like mentally, he's like, I'm going to put you guys in the spots you need to succeed. So what would I need a point guard for? That's where, like, how big his ego is.
Wow.
What about the second coming of Jeremy Lin, Mr.
Oh, I love this take. Ryan Nemhar is great. Ryan Nemhar is, considering he's an undrafted rookie.
Well, that was just a mistake by the NBA. He led the,
that was a mistake by the NBA. His brother was great.
Yeah.
His brother was great and undersized. He was great in college. How do you not draft him? That's just dumb.
How did they not improve that? Like, I get chasing upside and, like, the outline of a player is always more tantalizing than a finished product, especially when there's, you know, a smaller player. But good Lord, dude. Come on.
Yeah.
That's a big mess.
Yeah. So in any case, with Dallas, I mean, like, they're making these power forwards be their point guards. And so, like, so you have a bunch of guys. I mean, I'm looking at Najee, who's at, you know, 120 per game. These are per game ranks. Najee 120, PJ Washington 125. Who's actually, if you're looking for a trade candidate, trade for PJ Washington.
PJ Washington at PTJ.
He's shooting an atrocious outlier 3-3 percentage, which is torpedoing his rankings. If you punt that category and you assume it's going to come back to normal, he's up into the top 50-60, so trade for PJ Washington. But yeah. But also, I mean, like, Cooper Flagg is 82, Daniel Gafford's 107. I just wanted to highlight them because maybe Nemhar gets a little bit better. Maybe Kyrie comes back earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe they trade for somebody like a Trey Jones or a CJ McCollum.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden these guys become more valuable. I think it's I would just say, don't sleep on Dallas players right now.
I got to go get PJ Washington. I love him. That's a nice one. Speaking of the podfather, Bill Simmons, he's of the mind that the Mavericks should keep trying to win, that, like, they're not really out of it, that, you know, they're floating around the play-in spot, right? So, like, there's really no particular reason to throw the season out at this point. You're already kind of... You don't have Kyrie. It's like, you can trade Anthony Davis, but what are you going to really get for him? So I like that one. It's like, don't think of them as a wasteland. Like, think of them as maybe depreciated assets, some of those pieces.
Yeah, I kind of think it's risky to trading for those guys because this team's a little bit at an inflection point, especially because they're going to go as Anthony Davis goes a little bit. But if you're in one of those things, you're looking for a swing, not a terrible swing to take as far as risk goes.
No, that's a good one. That's good. You ready for a little trivia looking?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to play Pirtle here. Instead of giving you the actual shadowy outline of a player, we're going to see if we can figure out who I'm talking about here. So the next player on my list is a former consensus 5-star recruit. He played 1 year at Michigan. He was a second-round pick to the Clippers in 2022. You have any ideas yet? I got a little more information for you.
Wow, he's a five star that went as a, let's see here. No, I don't yet.
Okay, he's on his second team. He's 6'10", power forward center. So he's only played for two teams. He's a big guy, and I didn't realize this guy was a five-star recruit, but now that I think back on it, I do kind of recall him playing for Michigan.
Zubats?
No. Nice eyes on him.
I was trying to think. Let's see here. I'm going to need more clues. No, I don't. I'm embarrassed. I wish I had better guesses right now.
This is Musa Diabate.
Diabate.
And you've been a bit of a Diabate guy at times. I feel like that's at least how I have it memorized, is you like Diabate.
I had him on my short list.
Nice.
Right here.
Okay, cool. We should talk about him just a little bit. He's been a walking double-double every time he gets starters minutes. He's a little Okongwu-ish. He's a great shooter from the field, but he's also a great free throw shooter, which is really nice. Now he's behind your boy, Ryan Cockbrenner. I don't know if that's your boy. We never talked about him, but
no, he isn't. But I don't have anything against Creighton. It seems like a nice place.
Sure. Yeah. I never pick them in brackets. I always kind of fade them. That seems to go okay. But
yeah, they're in Kansas. I mean, like, it seems a little okay. Yeah.
Can you just see Diabate in the Warrior system? You know. So as I went through again, there's not a lot of contenders who are like really needing a big, but I just like the idea of him being a kind of rim running center that would fit in a system like Golden State. But I think he's a really talented player. I think he will eventually have an Okongwu-esque jump in production when given a role. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Diabate is a player that might be worth taking a chance on at some point for a team. Think of PJ Washington. We just talked about him. Remember how after a while it was confusing if he was good or not because he was on the Hornets so long we couldn't decipher anymore the like Hornetness of his career versus his actual skill, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think this is good. And I think it fits into the mold of the Hornets developing centers and then trading them away. In their third or fourth year. I mean, this kind of is a little bit of it's a well-worn path for them. So it wouldn't be surprising. And it's been interesting for Diabate because it's almost now been, so Kalkbrenner started, he started hot off the bat, amazing. And then slowly but surely, Diabate has been eating into his minutes. And that timeshare has been getting closer and closer and closer. And now you kind of always wonder, is it going to flip? Like, is Diabate going to be the more valuable player out of those two? I've been curious about that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't considered the idea that he just might jump Cockbrenner and take those minutes. I think he's a better player. So I think he deserves a less fluctuating role. I mean, he does get jerked around quite a bit, which was one of the frustrating things as believers in Okongwu early, is that it was like, dude, like, why wouldn't you want to give this guy a consistent role, and he would just get jerked around. So Diabate is my new Okongwu. I want to see him stop getting jerked around.
Yeah, you hate to get jerked off that much, for sure.
Don't jerk him around. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Speaking of... medical corner is a segment that I do think the people would love some more of from you, because, no, when you did that deep dive on the report of... what was the specific injury that Paolo had last year? No, I'm dead serious.
That Paolo had?
Yeah.
Well, I think he had an adductor strain. Yeah, yeah.
And then we had an innuendo. You did the adductor deep dive.
Yes. Yes, we did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And turns out, he ended up saying back a little bit later than statistically average, but he came back and was great at the end of the season. So, or himself, I should say.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you have any overarching takeaways through this exercise that's actionable? Like, we just have to be a little more creative in how to think about the next man up scenario this year. There's less of those players. And we were talking before we came on today and just talking about how last year there was always two to three players where we just, God, we wish we could find the room. You start looking for trades where you can do a 2-for-1 and free up a roster spot, because if somebody picks that dude up before you get to him, you're going to, you know, it's going to keep you up at night. And that hasn't been the case this year, which is just strange. Do you think, what do you think that means for us, the fantasy player? Like, how can we fine tune our game to adjust to that?
It's a great question. I mean, I think there's a little bit too of like where I think right now, in this point of the season, in particular, this first like third of the season, first half of the season, I think we are trained to chase gameplay, like maximize your gameplay. And so, like, if you see a guy that has 4 games this week versus 3, you're right, taking him. I'm, you know, and then as the season goes on, you're feeling a little, maybe that feeling changes a little bit. But boy, I'm almost changing my thought a little bit, in that I'm almost prioritizing guys as they pop and holding and wanting to hold on to them longer rather than dropping them immediately for, you know, fill in the blank guy who has a 2-game injury start, just because we're seeing seeing some of these guys pop and stay. I mean, I think the
Derek Queen, you know, is the biggest example, but
Derek Queen's a huge one. Yes. Yeah, that was going to be my, I had a little mini segment that maybe you wanted to pop into real quick. But,
let's do it.
Which was just players you're most kicking yourself because you're too slow on. I have Derek Queen as my first guy too.
Gotta be.
A
MVP of the
team. It's killing me. But who's some players that you just were an inch too slow on and it's bugging you?
I love this. This is recency bias, but I'll just share a memory. It was Ryan Nemhart. I, at the time, and he had a down game today, but, you know, it's just one game. And I think at this point, he's their point guard answer. I was waiting for the same reason. I wanted to get one more game, and I'm just not used to it mattering as much. And J-Rob snatched him up, and it made me crazy. I think it was like Wendell Carter or somebody. It was someone marginal I could have dropped. And I just waited too long, and I was like, dude, there was no reason to do that. Like, it just bothered me. I've always been kind of, I pride myself in being ahead of the beat usually and willing to take a gamble for upside. And so when I miss,
you're usually one step too early rather than one step too late. I mean, that's kind of your
MO. I
will
do that. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I'll be the guy, you know, I'll have Shingun his rookie year and then not be willing to pay the cost of the next year, sort of stuff like that. So yeah, Derek Queen's an obvious one. That's kind of a killer, you know, and Nemhart for me personally. Ace Bailey, I guess, is somebody who's an example of a player that I'd be willing to take some lumps on that I didn't get. I actually do have him in my points league, my keeper league. But he's an example of a player I'd be a little more patient on that, you know, once he flashed, I was like, well, you should have just grabbed Ace Bailey. Just kind of, you know, see what he can do in Utah.
Yeah, I mean, that segues right into my next question for you. And maybe he falls into the second category more than the first, but Ace Bailey, that is. But I was like, who, and I think this felt like a really nice finish for like kind of for what our topic was, or at least like kind of ties it in, was like the players you're most terrified now to be too slow on, like that you're checking and you don't want to be burned again. And so you're monitoring super closely.
As far as who's still available on the wire.
Yeah. Like and while you're thinking, if you want, I can throw in a couple guys if you want, but.
I guess the rotation guys in Memphis come to mind. I'm always kind of like, okay, what if someone separates from the Jalen Wells and the Cam Spencers and the Cowherds? I believe that's how you pronounce that. So that little cluster of guys, and I think in your league, probably at least one of them is available, and I just don't have a lot of separation on who's going to be the better player rest of season. So I always kind of look at them. I stop on Jalen Wells. You know, I pause on these guys and wonder, okay, maybe you take a chance on, because I feel like in that offensive environment, you know, it can fluctuate night to night. The rotations aren't super consistent.
Yes.
I still don't know why they fired their coach.
Right.
That they have for all those years,
But I mean, you also have Cedric Howard, Vince Williams. I mean, that's somebody's going to pop there.
Yeah. So I think of like that. I think of someone like that. I'm already in like Neek Clifford in Sacramento.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had him on my short list too. I had him written down.
Yeah, he came to mind pretty, and I think he's not available most spots already. Usually, and that's an example of you got to be quicker. Usually a neat Clifford in your standard size league, you can kind of wait for a while. But it's like now you got to freaking grab those dudes like as soon as they flash. Like Cockbrenner was available for 5 minutes. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So I think to be honest with you, I'm going to scour the waiver wire a little deeper, keep an eye on this. And next time we come on and record, I'm going to give a better list because I think I need to purge my own process a little bit and make sure I kind of like have that list of players, even though it's not as exciting as maybe in the past. And I'll be honest, you know, I'm 6-1 in both of my leagues and I've been coasting and focusing more on football. And I think I need to get a little better at knowing who those next level of guys below are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's for sure. Yeah. I mean, and it's all about, I mean, we just talked to a whole bunch of deep guys here. And so it's in the couple guys that I have in mind, and they're not necessarily they're not necessarily the likeliest guys to break out, but it's kind of one of those things you have an idea in your head early on, and it's hard to change it. So Jairus Walker is the number one guy.
I know.
With
he's
bullet
a hard one to
on my list.
Sucks. Right.
Like, yeah, just like every once in a while I watch a game and I'm like, oh, he's got all the tools. This guy's awesome. He gets injured and you're like, okay, he's going to be great. And so I keep watching him and I've never picked him up. He hasn't been to that point, but he's somebody I'm watching harder than anybody else. Another guy I'm watching really hard is that Igor Demin from the Nets, the point guard out of BYU.
6'9" point guard. Yeah.
He plays a lot. He looks okay,
is pretty bad. But he's a 6'9" rookie point guard, and they pretty high.
And I kind of just am like, could you just be a poor man's Ben Simmons, like by season end?
That's a poor man.
I don't know.
Well, he's plenty of money, but that got pretty bleak at the career of Ben Simmons.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Yeah, yeah. Even players like Jay Huff, like you had to move on Huff. You had to huff and puff to pick up Jay. No, but there are that's good. That next tier of players. I'm never confident on how to pronounce that 6'9" BYU point guard's name. But yeah, he's a good one. He's a watch list guy for sure. Rodney Stuckey as well.
Rodney Stuckey. Yeah, right. We're traveling back in time right now. We're just listing the top 35 Washington players of the last 15 years.
Tony Warden, the third. No, this is a good exercise, I think. If you made it this far in the pod, leave it in the comments if you'd like to kind of talk about the second tier waiver wire watch list, guys. I think we could come back and do a pod on that and maybe make sure it's super current. But no, that's a good list. You got anyone else on there?
No, that's it. And feel free to leave in the comments if you'd rather us talk about, you know, Kevin Durant and real players. We can talk about actual NBA players more often.
I like how we just kind of like show up mid-December, like, we're back, and just like get as niche as possible, just like just talking about role players.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So we're back.
There's no waiting in. There's no,
I venture to say that you can't get this kind of obscure fantasy basketball content anywhere else. So if this is your sort of thing, keep coming back. Nate and I are going to be more consistent from here on out. I think you can look for about 2 pods a week. Fridays or Saturdays, we're going to have as a regular day. So as you see the concept coming out, it'll be a little more reliable this year, which is always cool. PTJ is an independent fantasy basketball podcast. We dive deep into the margins as we've just proved. If you like what you hear, please do kindly rate, review, share, and subscribe this podcast. You can find PTJ on Twitter. You can find me, Flying J, at QuantoPhysics as well. Find us on YouTube, all that fun stuff for Nature on Clean. This is your boy Flying J. It's nice to be back. Enjoy the Cup games this weekend. Go Spurs, and we will talk to you all soon.
Go Spurs, and make sure to check out our number one sponsorship at steelbridgecoffee.com/PTJ as well. But I will also be rooting for the Spurs because I laid down a chunk of money preseason on them to win the NBA Cup, assuming Wemby was playing, but somehow they're still playing without him, so.
I'm glad that you found a way to bet against the zombies. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Go Spurs.
It's very appreciated. All right. We'll talk to y'all soon.
All right. Later.
Projecting the jump. Projecting the jump. Projecting the jump. Projecting the jump. It's Nathan, Licky, and Jay. Everybody knows it's a podcast. It's about basketball. It's about coffee sponsors. It's about drinking and stuff. Yeah.